Success Insight shares the stories of the people with passion and drive who make things happen in the world. Here's your host, Howard Fox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Success Insight podcast. Today's episode of Success Insight is another addition to our Outdoor Adventure Series. Now, the Outdoor Adventure Series celebrates the individuals and families, businesses, and organizations that seek out and promote the exploration of the great outdoors. Our guest today is Dan Small. Dan has been the host and producer of Outdoor Wisconsin, a production of Milwaukee PBS, since its premiere in November 1984. Wow. He also produces and hosts a weekly radio show, Outdoors Radio with Dan Small, which airs on 17 broadcast stations throughout Wisconsin and is available also as a podcast. He has been a contributing editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News, a biweekly newspaper. He is a member of multiple outdoor-focused organizations like the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. He's been a past board member and president of the Outdoor Writers Association of America and the Association of Great Lakes Outdoor Writers. My God, I think I could go on and on with this list of Dan and his background, what he has accomplished, but I think it's better that we just talk about this. So, Dan, welcome to the Success Insight podcast and the Outdoor Adventure Series.
Well, thank you, Howard. It's a pleasure. I enjoyed meeting you at the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association meeting, and now I got a chance to be on your show. That's great.
You know, and I truly appreciate it. I was invited to attend the meeting, and for our listeners, I was invited by a friend of mine, Linda O'Connor, who is a publicist, and she had an invitation to speak at the meeting, and she said, Howard, why don't you come with me? You can talk about podcasting. And you know, when I was up there in the North Woods of Wisconsin, what a phenomenal area and just the opportunity to meet folks like Dan and some of the other members. So, Dan, what a welcoming opportunity. So thank you there at the conference and thank you again for joining me today.
You bet. And WOCA, as we call ourselves for short, is a great group. As you mentioned, you made some new friends, and Wisconsin North Woods is such a wonderful place to be any time of year, especially in the summer when it's hot. Anywhere south of Eagle River. And it was pretty warm when we were up there too.
Well, you know, it's funny when we got to the camp and we were at Trees for Tomorrow, which is a wonderful venue. It used to be the part of the, in its origins, the Civilian Conservation Corps. So they were helping to build the roads and trails so we could enjoy the great outdoors. And when I got into my room, I opened the window because I thought, well, there's no air conditioning, but I want some air coming in. I tell you, it was very nice. So good location.
Yep, absolutely.
So, Dan, I mean, again, as I alluded to in the introduction, there's so much to talk about, but what I love, if we could, is kind of share a little bit about your background. I mean, you are not originally from Wisconsin. You've got quite a background. So let's talk a little bit about those origins and just kind of weave in to how we got to where we are today.
All right. Well, I have been an outdoors enthusiast all my life. As a kid, my brothers and I caught snakes and frogs, and we were always out playing in the fields behind the house. And when we could sneak across the road to this quarry that didn't want people there, but we explored all over it. I hunted woodchucks there when I was a little older. And I got my start that way, I guess. And then with my dad, who took us hunting and fishing. I'm the oldest of three brothers. And then we have a sister who's 18 years younger than I am. So when I was growing up, she was not even around. But the three brothers would go camping with the family. We fished a lot. I got to do everything first because I'm 3 years older than Mike, who's 3 years older than Pete. So I got to explore and try out these activities. But then I noticed that they started doing them at an earlier age than I did. And I guess that always happens with siblings as you go down the line. But I got interested in hunting and fishing. I did it through high school and college. Probably should have studied biology. If I were to do it again, I might go into the biological sciences somewhere as a career. I don't know. But I went into English and French literature instead and learned to write by reading good writers and wanted to be a writer. Actually, I wanted to be an outdoor writer from age 12 or so on. And I actually published a very rudimentary, unscientific survey of dead animals on the road.
Oh my.
We discovered when we're driving to and from hunting and fishing places, and sent it to the New York State Conservationist, and they actually ran it. And the last time the conference was in New York at Lake Placid, I met the editor and I said, hey, do you think you could find that? And he did. And he sent me a digital copy of that brief note that they ran in their, I think, letters to the editor. But I got started that way and then wrote an article when I was teaching. Well, back up a little bit. After college, I went to Rice University and I was teaching and writing on the side. And moved to Wisconsin when I got downsized at SUNY Albany and never looked back, really. I came to northern Wisconsin to Northland College. I wasn't sure if I wanted to take the job because when you compare SUNY Albany, which was the Taj Mahal of state universities, I think Nelson Rockefeller built it as a kind of a monument to himself. The quads are huge and it's just a very impressive place. And anyway, from there to this little college in this little town on Lake Superior with rundown old buildings, I wasn't sure I wanted to go there. But they sent me the college catalog for the next year. This was in 71 or 72. And inside the front cover was a young fellow named Mike Brasek in his cap and gown, standing on the dock at Bayfield, holding still alive the world record brown trout that he had just caught on commencement day. And I said, this is the place. So, is that the tipping point that sent me there? I don't know, but I remember that very clearly. And my wife and I moved to northern Wisconsin. I taught there for 15 years. We are since divorced. We had a son there who is now living in Bayfield and working with me on projects. She's still teaching at Northland College and says they'll carry me out of here. She's, I think, the longest tenured faculty. She's been there longer than anybody, going on 50 years. Then in 84, I got an invitation to, I was at my first Outdoor Writers Association of America conference. And here's why outdoor communicators or communicators of any sort really ought to go to the meetings of their peers, because a fellow who was the outdoors editor at the Milwaukee Sentinel, a fellow named Don Johnson, told me that a station in Milwaukee was looking for somebody to host an outdoor show. And I said, that's nice. And he said, no, you got to go and talk to them. And I said, well, I've never done television. I'm a writer and a teacher. I don't know anything about TV. But he basically convinced me that I could do it and that I should go and apply. And so on my way back to Ashland from Traverse City, Michigan, I found a phone booth. And remember phone booths?
I think I recall them vaguely.
Yeah. I found a phone booth in Iron River, Michigan. I got out and I called.
I've been there, by the way.
Is that right?
I've been there, yes.
Have you stopped at the Stormy Cromer factory there?
You know, I don't recall that, but I do remember Iron Mountain.
Yeah, well, there's Iron Mountain and Iron River Mountain Wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this was Ironwood. I honestly don't recall. But anyway, I made a call to the director at Milwaukee PBS. And he said, well, when can you come down and do an audition? And it was a week later, and I did. And a week after that, they called me and they said, we want you to do the show. And that was in 1984. And until they stopped production last year because of COVID, I'm still technically the host of the show, but we haven't shot any new shows. But we did 52 shows the first 2 years, and then 39, and then 26, and then finally 13 under new management. And now they're running, they've got 36 years worth of shows. If they want to run them all,
they're on a loop.
They are running what we call encore performances of Outdoor Wisconsin. So that's my, the long, short answer of how I got into TV, actually.
Very good. Before we started the actual episode and hit record, you had mentioned the word serendipity. And I definitely think there's been some serendipitous opportunities that have crossed your paths and have led you to, you know, where you are today, where we are today.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. And the trick is to recognize them and take advantage of them and act on them.
Exactly.
I can't say that I have done that all the time, but when karma or God or serendipity, you know, lays something in front of you that looks like an opportunity, it's up to you to jump on it and do something with it. And, you know, that's what I did with the teaching job at Northland College and with the TV show. And then after, you know, 20 some years of, I think it was about 20 years of doing television, a friend of mine who's now deceased, Tony Dean, who had an outdoor TV and radio show in South Dakota, he had been telling me for several years, get into radio. He said, I make more money in radio than I do in everything else I do. And I still haven't figured that part out, but
you and me both.
Yeah. But on his, you know, his recommendation, I started a radio show with a partner, Judy Nugent, who is still a WOCA member, I think. And we did that for 2 years. This was back in 06. And then we weren't making enough money to pay both of us, and she got the offer to teach at Loyola High School in Chicago, which you probably know,
sure,
that she graduated from, where both of her parents taught, and she got a teaching offer, a chairmanship of the department, tenure, and free tuition for two kids. I mean, how can I compete with that?
You can't compete with that.
Yeah, so I said, good luck, and, you know, and wished her well. And then I had met a young man named Jeff Kelm through, again, serendipitous connections, and asked him if he would help me out, because I like to have someone to talk with, you know, like we're doing here on podcast. And I didn't have the editing skills and didn't want to really get into that. And so he came on board with me in, I think, about 2008, and he's been with me ever since. And he's a wonderful addition to the show. I do most of the interviews now, but he and I open and close the radio show, and he edits it and posts it, and, you know, people listen to it. And that's a good thing.
That's fantastic. I mean, the recognition, I mean, the face, the voice, recognition, growing up. I mean, I grew up in Southeast Michigan, a suburb of Detroit. So we had our local PBS station, and I remember the outdoor shows. You know, it's funny how I'm listening to the conversation last week at the show, listening to you now, and I'm remembering, wait a minute, I used to sit on Saturdays, you know, and I would sit down and watch PBS, because besides ABC, NBC, and CBS, those were the shows, was the public television show, Channel 56. They used to have the auction. And that is just such a wonderful, you know, way to introduce people like me, young kids like me, who grew up in an urban area, to the great outdoors. And so I can imagine, you know, you walking down the street and people saying, wait a minute, I know you. That's got to be kind of a little surreal for you there.
It was at first. I'm used to it now. You know, 35 years of it, you kind of get used to it. And the one gratifying thing is it still happens, even though much of the state does not air the show in prime time anymore. Right. The Madison headquarters of PBS Wisconsin, which is different from Milwaukee PBS, and people even here in Wisconsin don't understand that, and you know, it's just two different entities. So, you know, most of the state hasn't seen my show in years, because it's kind of buried on Saturday morning when everybody's out doing things. But people still recognize me, and they say, oh, I love your show, I used to watch it. In fact, you met Mark LaBarbera at WOCA.
Sure.
The next day, we went to fish a little lake about 10 minutes north of Eagle River at the recommendation of Art Barlow, one of our members. And as we're getting the boat ready to launch it, another couple pull up with a truck and a boat. And I thought, oh, if this guy's a guide, you know, I'm kind of slow here. I want to make sure he, you know, he's comfortable, or I can let him launch, you know. And he said, no, we're okay. We're fine. And the lady gets out and she says, oh, that's a nice boat. And I always say, yeah, it's for sale, because it is. I get the use of one every year. And she said, well, it looks new. How is it for sale? And then I said, well, I use it in my TV show, and we get one from the Crestliner and from Cedar Lake Sales, our dealer. And she says, what show? And I said, Outdoor Wisconsin. And then she did an, oh, my God, you're damn small. And, you know, that happens more often at boat landings and gas pumps. It's crazy. And I can't walk in. Well, I shouldn't say that, but frequently walk into a bar, or if I walk into a bar in Wisconsin, it's not unusual that somebody offer to buy me a beer.
Well, you know something? I think that's a good life. That's a life well lived.
Yeah. I'm still cobbling it together after all these years.
So I have a question for you, Dan.
Sure.
As you started to take on the role of the host of the PBS show, the radio, and also the radio show, how did you begin to gather the material or decide on the stories? Because, I mean, outdoor recreation, outdoor adventure, I mean, it's a very broad subject, and you can kind of drill down into specific areas. How did you begin to build this library of topics to cover?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I'm a generalist. There are certain types of hunting and fishing that I really enjoy and would do all the time if it was available all year long.
What are those, by the way?
I'm a musky fisherman.
That's a fish not to be toyed with, as I understand.
Right. And I fly fish for them. Because my brother, well, not because my brother ties flies, but he ties these great big musky flies. And so I don't have to buy $20 or $25 flies. And it's just, it's a great challenge. It's a lot of fun. And a few years ago, a lot of people have asked me, why do you fly fish for them? And I said, well, if I'm not going to catch a musky, I'd rather have fun not catching one than throw these big baits with the heavy tackle all day long. But anyway, so musky fishing. Turkey hunting, when I was younger, grouse hunting, which is up north with dogs, and it's pretty strenuous and demanding. You're walking through thick cover, and the shots are very fleeting, and you know, you might hit one bird out of four that you shoot at. And deer hunting, those are the four things, I guess. And trout, you know, trout fishing, I live in the heart of the so-called driftless area, which is loaded with trout streams. I probably have 100 trout streams within a half hour of my house. I don't fish them because when I lived in northern Wisconsin, I got burned, not really burned out, but I kind of got spoiled. We had fabulous trout fishing up there, and I've kind of moved on to other things. I'll go once or twice a year, but not every week like a lot of the locals do here. When we started the TV show, I thought, well, we'll go bass fishing, we'll go walleye fishing, we'll go pheasant hunting, and we'll do this for maybe a couple of years, and then we'll run out of ideas. Well, 36 years into it, I think we've scratched the surface. There are, first of all, if you take the fishing sports alone, there's so many ways to fish for walleyes and bass and muskies and trout, and so many places to do it. And so many interesting people doing it. The guides alone would make a wonderful series. And I've fished with a number of excellent guides and, missed a few old timers who passed away before I got a chance to fish with them. So when you kind of, drill down is a term I think you used and a lot of people use it, on the surface, walleye fishing. If you're not a walleye fisherman, you think, well, you know, how many ways can there be to catch walleyes? But there are magazines devoted to bass fishing, walleye fishing, and crappie fishing. We call them vertical magazines because they're specific to one facet of the sport. And then once you get on the air, and you know this, your guests say, oh, you got to talk to my uncle. He makes birch bark canoes. Or my cousin has the best grouse dog in the world, or something like that. You meet this guide and you find out his wife is a wildlife artist. And there's another topic.
It just grows and grows.
It does. It grows like Topsy.
So I've got to ask a question. With the show ideas and meeting the people, and you have your love of the musky fishing, turkey. Do you like to cook? Do you cook what you eat, or you give it? Well, when you're hunting turkey, it's kind of like a turkey doesn't have a choice. Yeah. But maybe does the muskie have a choice, or is he dinner?
Yeah, we release muskies. That's kind of the recent protocol among muskie fishermen. You don't kill them. And the state keeps increasing the size limit. On some lakes, it's 50 inches. If you want to keep one, it's got to be 50 inches long. I've never caught a 50-inch muskie, you know. And the only two that I've eaten were two that died accidentally. The secret in muskie fishing is that they are absolutely delicious. They're actually better than walleye. It's a flaky white flesh that makes a great poor man's lobster. That's usually, well, I shouldn't say usually, but that's the way I prepared it. You cut, slab fillets, chunks like you would salmon, and poach it, you know, for 10 minutes. And man, with drawn butter, it's absolutely delicious. So
you're making me hungry, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I've got a raccoon in the slow cooker right now.
Are you kidding me?
No. And I ate one many years ago and didn't particularly enjoy it. It was a roadkill that I skinned for my former father-in-law, who was a judge in the French colonial system, a real fascinating guy. And to him, a raccoon was an exotic animal. So I tanned a big boar raccoon hide and a little buck fawn that I shot. And I took those over to, he was in Djibouti in Africa at the time. So I don't know if they ended up in Nice. They had an apartment in Nice as well. And he took me to the open air market, you know, like a farmer's market, only this is a native open air market. He wanted to buy me a cheetah skin to take home. And I said, I can't do that. I can't take it on the plane. You know, it's protected. But there they were, stacked up there. But anyway, yeah, I've got a raccoon in the slow cooker. We have chickens and goats and sheep, and the raccoons get into the chicken coop.
Yes.
If you're not careful. And one got in a couple of years ago, killed half a dozen chickens. And I said, okay, it's game is on now.
Game on.
I started trapping them. And in 2019, I trapped and killed 14 raccoons. Felt bad about it, but I thought, well, what am I going to do with them? And then last year, 2020, I remembered that there is this annual coon feed in Delafield, Wisconsin. It was started by a guy named Tom McNulty many years ago. He's deceased now, but I think it's in its 90th year or so. They do it every February. They gather they ask the trappers to save the meat from the raccoons, because most people just skin them and throw the meat away. And they cut the fat off it, and they barbecue it. And you got to be in line by about 4:30 if you want to get your roast raccoon at the Delafield coon feed. So I thought, well, okay, I can do this. So I skinned a couple of young ones and cut them up, and they were pretty good. They weren't wonderful, but you know, it's a different flavored meat, and woodchucks are actually better. And I shot six of those off the back deck last summer. I cleaned them out because there aren't any this year, but the young ones are absolutely delicious. But anyway, I have a friend named Ramon Cram. He's at our farmer's market in Viroqua, and he makes a rhubarb barbecue sauce.
Wow. Okay.
I roasted this one raccoon, and then I slathered the rhubarbecue sauce on it. And at the next farmer's market, I said to him, Ramon, I have a little poem for you, and I won't sing it for you, but if I were to sing it, it would be to the tune of Wabash Cannonball. And it goes like this. It's real short. A raccoon, he's a rascal. He wears a bandit's mask. He raids my chicken coop at night and never thinks to ask. He tore out all my window screens and then he wrecked the door, but I caught him in a trap last night, so he'll raid my coop no more. Now the coon is in the Nesco and the whiskey's in the still. I got a bushel full of sweet corn and I'm firing up the grill. Roscoe, my old hound dog, is howling at the moon, so let your belt out one more notch. It's time for barbecue.
Oh, my God.
And he cracked up. And I wrote an article about it for Wisconsin Outdoor News. And anyway, that's what I do for fun. At my age, I figured, you know, I can do off-the-wall things because I don't give a rip anymore. And people get a kick out of it.
You know, I think that's wonderful. And I have to admit this to you again. You know, I'm an urban guy. And growing up in Michigan, I moved to Chicago. I lived in Alabama for a year, lived overseas for a little bit, but I'm still an urban guy. And I've never fished.
Really?
I have never fished. And I have to share, when I was at the local workshop last week, I'm thinking to myself, I'm coming back up here and I'm going fishing with a couple of these guys. So, and in fact, I love to cook.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm thinking there's a fishing trip and then there's a little, some cooking demonstrations with you and some of the other attendees. Cause I mean, I just think it's fascinating. I mean, to me, exotic is, you know, I love lamb. That's about as exotic as I get.
Yeah.
Okay. Love fish, chicken, obviously. You know, it's just such a broad, you know, I think view of really some of the experiences that you've had. And I would love, you know, to kind of continue to go down some of these paths with you. And, you know, we'll continue on this podcast for a little while longer, but how do you feel about coming back on to tell some more of the stories? Because I'd love to learn more about your work with, you know, WOCA, with the OWAA, and really some of how you've, you know, even the shows. I mean, there's just such a variety. We could go on and on, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. That's a problem I have, I guess. And that's both a blessing and a curse sometimes in radio. I mean, you got to fill the air, but you got to fill it with interesting info. I'd definitely come back. And if you come back to WOCA next year, I'll bring my boat up. We'll go fishing. And I might even bring some lamb to throw on the grill for our Friday night cookout, because we raise sheep and we butcher our own sheep, you know.
You know, I am like so totally there. So thank you so much. And, you know, and I did join, WOCA just because, you know, I was interested in, you know, it's just a great opportunity. And, you know, for anybody that's up in the Midwest, you know, Wisconsin, go join and go attend it. This was a great opportunity. And I think the other thing is some of the subject matter, the conversations that were going on. I mean, it's topics that I never had been on my radar. Mm-hmm. And you know how it is, again, serendipity, you start talking about the subject and all of a sudden everything you see is that subject. And it's just the way it goes. You know, one more thing I think I'd like to just touch on is the topic of a bobblehead. Share, if you would, just share a little bit about the bobblehead.
Sure. The PBS station that I worked for, I don't have a contract this year, they had a promotions manager who called me in one day, about 5-6 years ago, I think. And he said, we're doing a bobblehead for these other two show hosts. Some people might know the name, John McGivern and John Gerda. Do you want one too? And I said, hell yeah. I mean, you know, how many times in my life am I going to have that opportunity that somebody would pay for the development of this bobblehead? So they made the bobblehead and offered it as a premium during pledge. And I got a few and I sell them at sports shows. And if I part company with the station, I want to get my hands on the rest of them. I'll buy them from them because I can sell them. And in Milwaukee, you may or may not know this, there is the Bobblehead Museum and Hall of Fame.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And we did a segment with them. I presented that bobblehead. I sent you a picture That was actually taken at the bobblehead museum. And I gave them two, one for the museum and one for their traveling exhibit. And I don't know what they've done with it. I haven't been back there since. But there's a guest for you, the host of the, or the creator of the bobblehead museum.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Well, that's the story of my bobblehead.
All right. You know, and I know there's other, I'd like to perhaps, again, I'd love to bring you back on, and I'm glad you're open to this, and talk more about your writing and your speaking, and really, you know, you're a bit of an icon. And I mean, I mean that in the nicest sort of way. I mean, and I have to admit too, I don't often, I have a lot of great interviews, but I don't, you're almost at the top of the pyramid of my icon scale. Okay. So I'm a little bit, I'm in awe. So, but I think just being able to share some of the work that you've done and your contributions to outdoors, conservation, education, and really to the whole idea around, you know, the public access to really what's, you know, in the age of COVID last year, being able to get outside for yourself, take your family was so very important. And, you know, you've been a factor to help people get outside and over many years. So I think I'd like to talk more about that with you.
That would be great. And yeah, it was absolutely critical last year. And this year again, it is. I think, you know, there's a resurgence in COVID. I don't know where we're going with this, but people are getting outside and that's good.
Very good. Listen, Dan, before we head out today, if our listeners would like to start on the path to getting to know more about you and your work, where's the best places for them to go?
Well, I'll give you two websites. One is MilwaukeePBS.org, MilwaukeePBS.org. There's a drop-down menu, and just look for Outdoor Wisconsin. That's the TV show that that I used to do, and I'm still the host, and they have 3 or 4 years posted there. So that's MilwaukeePBS.org. The other one is where my radio show podcast originates, and that is lake-link.com. And if you just search for radio, you'll find me there, lake-link.com/DSO radio. But just go to LakeLink and search for radio, and you'll find it.
Well, we'll definitely provide the backlinks to the actual page where your show resides on Milwaukee PBS, as well as on LinkLink as well. I know you've got your blog, you're on Twitter and on Facebook, so I'm now following you, by the way.
Okay.
And we'll if you're okay, we can provide those backlinks as well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I do appreciate you shared one of your photos with one of your, as you called it, one of your Finney friends.
Yeah.
And the also a shot with the bobblehead. But, you know, if there's any other shots that you'd like to share with us, you know, we'd love to have those on our main webpage and our show notes to include some pictures. And, you know, if you're open to that, you know, a couple more would be great. And just, you know, it's such a fascinating conversation. And it really, Dan, it was a pleasure to get to know you last week. And, you know, your openness right away to join me on the podcast. And really, I'm excited that you're come back on. And I know you're a busy guy because you've got all these projects and perhaps you have some more raccoon in the slow cooker, but that you're going to be working on. But, you know, definitely looking forward to have you back in, on the show and talk about the outdoor adventures and your experiences. So thank you so much.
I'd love to do it anytime. You're quite welcome.
Fantastic. All right, folks, we have just been chatting with Dan Small. I mean, it is a, you know, I would be coming up short if I was just to say Dan was an outdoor adventure enthusiast. And when I used the word icon earlier, I mean, he has had such an impact on not only public radio, public television, really the length and his library of work educating the public about the outdoors, Wisconsin, whatever the outdoor sport is. And such a fascinating career and the work he's done and his accomplishments, and really very excited that Dan's going to come back on to the Success Insight podcast and the Outdoor Adventure series. do let us know, you know, what you thought about today's episode. And also do go out and visit Dan, Milwaukee PBS, as well as the Lake Link site. We'll provide those backlinks as well, and also to Twitter, Facebook, and his blog. You can also visit us on successinsidepodcast.com. We're also on LinkedIn and Facebook on our Success Insight Podcast pages. We are on almost all the major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Radio, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio. I think I'm now missing a couple. We're now on Stitcher, by the way. And also you can check out our playlists, which are on Spotify. So many ways to listen and consume this content that we are producing. So again, I hope you enjoyed today's show with Dan. Let us know in the comments on whatever site you're on. And in the meantime, go out, enjoy yourself, enjoy the great outdoors, continue to practice social distancing. If appropriate, continue to wear your mask as well. And folks, we'll see you on the next episode of the Success Insight Podcast and the Outdoor Adventure Series. Take care now.
Success Insight is a production of Fox Coaching and First Story Strategies. Find us online, successinsightpodcast.com.